The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another episode of Split Nation's Comic Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And joining us whenever he gets a little PC issue straightened out will be at @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yeah, Dirt. I didn't have the heart to give the sad trombone.
And we have a very special guest with us here tonight. We have the writer of the now on newsstands in your local comic book shop, Dave. And Dave 2 writer, Ryan, enough. Should have asked you this before we started. How do you say your last name?
It's Ferrier.
Ferrier.
Yeah. A lot of honors.
I always forget to ask people how to say
Ryan, names. We could have gone through the whole show calling you Ferrier.
So, like I said, Dave 2 is out, came out in stores yesterday. And
yes.
The previous volume, Dave, is available at Comixology or your local store. Make sure to go check that out.
Yeah, sorry for the rustling plastic bag because I actually picked up hard copies this week.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Beautiful.
There we go.
Hard copy.
Thank you, sir.
Not a problem. I got a hard copy of the first volume, too.
Awesome.
Ryan, can you let everyone know, I guess give the, what they call it, the sales pitch of what Dave is?
Yeah, so Dave is basically, if you fast forward 500 years into the future, sentient robots have taken over and they've wiped out all of mankind and also every living thing in the galaxy. So the robots, they just have Earth. That's their planet. And they become human in that they have jobs and they have kids and there's TV shows and mortgages. And they basically become human because there's no threats at all in the universe. And so the Dave focuses on the former leader of the war robots who, since there is peace, he is relegated to working a desk job that he hates. And so essentially, it surrounds his midlife crisis because he misses, you know, the action. And he used to be a hero, and now he's just kind of miserable, and his family life is falling apart. And so the first volume kind of is a story about him struggling to get back to where he was once he's kind of thrown into that. And it's all mayhem and lots of potty humor and we tried to go pretty wild with it. Myself and Valentin Ramon, who's the artist and co-creator.
So it was a co-idea that you and Valentin both came up with?
I kind of planted the seeds initially, but I mean, it's his artwork informed the story as much as my script, you know, would help him. And I think just like any other comic, if it was with a different artist, it would cease to be what it is. But yeah, Valentin's just, he's a genius and he's hilarious. A huge amount of the detail and like background stuff and just the different quirky things that are all over each page, that's all him. A lot of it's not me. So we really tried to do some serious world building, and I think we're both really proud of kind of this alternate future that's equally a nightmare as much as it is a fun house, so yeah.
Glad you brought up how his art sort of informs the book, because I guess before we got started, when I was finishing the issue that came out yesterday, I was thinking to myself how I couldn't imagine the book done by anybody else, because it looks like he put so much of himself into, like you said, the little like Easter eggs or just little funny bits he adds here and there. I know back when I read the first issue of the first volume, one thing that stuck out to me was how Dave's headpiece changes colors with the
right
emotion.
Yeah.
was that just something that came out of, I guess, was it something he came up with, or was that something that you had thought of?
Well, I think in general, Valentin and I, we share a lot of the same sensibilities and personality, and I mean, Dave's a really personal book. There's a lot of me in there. There's a lot of my life experiences and stuff in there, and my emotions. But also, Valentin really shares that too. So like, it was a perfect collaboration in that sense. And I almost think that sometimes he and I are like psychically linked, because there's stuff that he puts down on the page that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly like you just pulled it out of my brain. Like, we share the very much the same thought process. And so stuff like all the background elements and all of his design stuff, and the eye stuff. Yeah, I think the eye thing was, we were trying to figure out, okay, well, we've got this book where there's no humans in it, and that's, I remember when we first pitched it to a publisher, some of the concerns were like, well, there's no humans, so how are you going to convey emotion, right? So I think Valentin's done an amazing job of just kind of commanding pose and body language.
Absolutely.
And so the eye, you know, he doesn't have a nose or a mouth or two eyes, he's just got one eye. So I think we leaned on that color change a fair amount in the first volume, just, you know, to kind of amp up the emotion in some of the more stressful scenes.
Sure. No, definitely, you know, expressive gestures and body language, you know, really tells the story, you know, without even, you don't even notice the fact that their faces are basically featureless.
Right.
So, you know, you have to give him a lot of credit. How did you come to collaborate with Valentin?
Oh, wow. This was, we had started working on Dave, I want to say 2012 is when we first kind of met up and started talking about it. But we met on a forum, like a comic book artist forum.
Oh, okay.
That was back before I didn't have any work out, so like, I didn't really know a lot of people. There wasn't a lot of networking and circles and stuff like that for me to kind of talk to artists that I know. So at the time, I just put an ad out, and he was the first person to reply, and I dug his work. And then he actually sent me a character concept drawing of Dave, which actually, oddly enough, became the first cover, the solid cover with just the blue background. That came from one of his original character sketches. So I was sold. Like, as soon as he sent that over, I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect.
Is that the cover from the very first issue of the first volume?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I'm thinking back now. That was like him, he was like jumping or riding something, right, in the air?
Oh, no, it was the one where it was just Dave holding a cup of coffee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember that cover sticking out to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's plenty of middle fingers that I remember. That's what I remember.
There's a lot of middle fingers.
You give hope to all the would-be creators out there that, yes, it is possible to find someone to collaborate with on the various interwebs.
Oh, totally, yeah. Like, when I started writing comics, I took about a year off from pitching, and I focused on just doing a bunch of shorts that I could collect in like an anthology. And almost all of the artists that I work with, I found through like Twitter.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, sometimes it's as easy as, you know, just putting out the feelers, and there's people that want to work, you know. So it's there's no better time than now to use social media to try and make some comics.
And it works to get guests on shows, because that's how I asked you.
That's true, yeah.
if we neglected to say this, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. And welcome back to our man PCN _ Dirt on Twitter. Can you hear us, Dirt?
Ooh.
Oh, no. Good job, Dirt.
You sound like Mickey Mouse.
Good job, Dirt. This is so awesome.
You sound like your voice was sped up.
He does sound like a chipmunk.
Yeah, you sound like a chipmunk. We can see you. Yeah.
Seriously, dude. Chipmunk.
Well, Doug.
Dave! That's what you could...
His eye would be nice and red right now.
Yeah.
So, I was just doing some background checking. Originally, did Dave start at IDW? Or
no,
was it somewhere first?
Yeah, it came out through Monkey Brain Comics, who is a wonderful, wonderful publisher of many fine books. And that is run by Chris Roberson and Allison Baker, who are two of my most favorite people. And I'm very grateful for them to them for giving us, you know, the opportunity to even have Dave in the first place. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and they have a ton of great books, and they're all, you can find them on they're all on Comixology, and you can all find them at Monkey Brain's website. But Dave started there, yeah, in 2000. I think at that point it was 2014 when it finally came out. So Valentin and I had worked on it for almost 2 years, I think, before something ever became of it. That ran digitally first through Comixology. And then when, because a lot of Monkey Brain books, when they get collected and trade for print, some of them have gone through like Dark Horse, and I think one's gone through Image, but a fair amount of them go through IDW. And so when it came time to have that conversation about putting the trade out, IDW, you know, they've been super supportive and really into the book. So they took it a step further, and we put out the monthly single issues through IDW. So that was really cool too.
So is it the same issues that came out through IDW, the same as what came out through Monkey Brain?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was new covers for the IDW the single IDW releases. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, now I know why I recognize Monkey Brain from. That's where Greg Pak's Code Monkey Save World was published.
Yeah, and they've got some great books. They've got Bandette won an Eisner. High Crimes was nominated for an Eisner.
Wow.
Yeah, they've got some great books there.
You also recently, earlier this year, you had Curb Stomp with Boom Studios, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was it a 4 or 5 issue series?
Yeah, it was 4. Yeah, that went from February to June, I think.
Okay. Well, can you tell everyone what Curb Stomp was about?
Yeah, Curb Stomp is there's a 4-issue mini, and it's very tonally different in every way from Dave. It's a bit more, I don't want to say a crime book, it's more of a street punk gang book. And basically, we were kind of touching on a lot of kind of late 70s, early 80s aesthetics in street gang warfare. So a lot of people compared it to the Warriors, which is a fair comparison, but at the same time, a little bit different. It definitely had a grindhouse kind of vibe to it, but it was a story about these three boroughs, and they each are represented by a gang. And one gang in particular is comprised of all women, and it's basically a gang warfare book where these other gangs are trying to take all these turfs so that this big metropolitan city can essentially gentrify. And so it dealt with issues that are still prevalent today, but at the same time it's a lot of fun, and we're really proud of the character work we got in there, and just the tones and stuff. It's all stuff that we were really passionate about. We got to have some cool like knife fights and all sorts of violence, ultra violence and stuff like that.
Yeah. So how is it working with all these different publishers? I guess I'm sure, is it just going around and doing the pitch to the different publishers and seeing which ones like it, or is it where you have some like Curb Stomp where you think this fits perfectly with Boom, let me take it to them and hopefully they eat it up?
I find that all the publishers that I've worked with, I've kind of gotten to know first. And I think lettering was a really good way for me to kind of get my foot in the door. Because most of the publishers that I've dealt with exception of IDW, I've done lettering work for them before. I letter a ton of books. I still do. And I know in the case of Boom, and Boom's been like really super good to me, like really, really, really great for giving me the opportunities that they have. But I met Boom. I met some editors at a convention, and you know, a year later, I started lettering books for them. And then I think it's less about the here's my pitch, and it was more about like go do your own work and self publish all your stuff, and then you know it's like then editors and publishers, they can see what you're capable of, and they get to know you as a person, and then you kind of start finding things to do together. And I think that's, anytime anyone asks me for advice about how to start making comics, or a term I dislike is the term breaking in, how to break in, and I always say just go make your own comics first. So it's really, it seems like it's the only way nowadays. And if you make a big enough mark, or any mark that's, I guess, worth looking at, then you'll get attention from, you know, the big two, Marvel, DC, they'll come find you.
So self-published first, get on people's radar, and then start moving up the food chain.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. So how do you find, in terms of these various projects that you have, they seem to run a very large spectrum. You know, they run across a very large spectrum. You have crime stuff. You have this really essentially a family drama that's disguised as robot science fiction,
right.
in Dave. And I see that you're also writing, or maybe you've written, I didn't have a chance to look at this article that carefully, you're writing some licensed books. Right?
Yeah. I just finished writing two volumes of Sons of Anarchy for Boom as well, and that was super fun. I was a big fan of the show, and yeah, just had a blast doing that. And I wrote like a Bravest Warriors short that came out in the summer, which was cool too. So like that was more like that's probably the most kid-friendly work I've ever done, but I had a total blast doing it, so like I'd really like to do more of that stuff. And I got to write a Marvel short over the summer too, so that was fun.
Which it was Secret Wars Battle World, right?
Yeah, the third one. Yeah.
What was the story?
Oh, it was Deadpool trying to catch Devil Dinosaur, but it's set in like the Wild West. So he's like an old West version of Deadpool.
Oh no, I'm gonna have to dig that one up. You know, like we in the course of our show, you know, like we end up reading and reviewing so many books. It's just hard to touch on all of them, and
yeah.
You know, that's just one of the ones that's like, ah, do I download this? I'm going to go back and look for that. That sounds like a great concept.
Yeah, what
issue, you know what issue number it was?
Oh, yeah, it was number three.
Number three, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, Logan Ferber did the art, and he's just amazing, too. So
nice. You also did you do Robocop Last Stand?
Oh, yeah, I was the letterer on that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I lettered.
Our mute co-host, I think, is a fan of some of the Robocop books, so I wanted to make sure to get...
Oh no!
You still chipmunk dirt?
Oh my goodness! I love that this is one live and two will come out in audio format.
Maybe
you should write it down on paper like Bob Dylan and then just throw it
in. What's funny is that I don't know. Is this the first wheat dirt that your The third, whatchamacallit, the thing on the bottom, I forget what the technical term for it is, it's working. Right, the lower third is working, but now you have no audio. Lovely.
For grins, maybe try to do the adjust bandwidth usage, see if that actually does anything. Watch how the camera just zoomed in.
What if he's just trolling us and he's got this massive helium tank next to him?
That would be so.
That's too funny. Oh my goodness. All right, Dirt. So, you know, like I can only imagine. What we need to do is caption what Dirt is saying with some stuff from Dave too. You know, like the traffic. When I was joking pre-show about the road rage language that comes out in this book, and I know it was in the first volume, and it makes me laugh because as a born and bred New Yorker, I've sat in traffic and sworn out the window at people in the exact language. You know, it makes me laugh.
Yeah, I always imagine if I were to be a creator, I'd want definitely something as humorous as that, just because that's how my sense of humor works.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I don't know.
What's the reaction been like, at least as of yesterday?
Oh, for day two, it's been good. Yeah, it's been great. A lot of people, a lot of great support, and people seem to be digging it. Obviously, you know, I was a little more nervous than I was with the first, compared to the first volume.
Why's that?
I think because, you know, it's just like in movies, there's like the pressure to deliver with a sequel, so to speak. And I feel like the first volume of Dave is a really solid, cohesive, finite story. There is a lot of us personally in there, so it was very much there was a level of catharsis with the first volume. And so when we did when we started developing the second volume, we kind of, like, with the first volume, I was trying to say something. I was trying to say something about where I was in life. And with the new volume, I kind of had to dig a little deeper inside myself to figure out, like, what the important themes would be. And so they're definitely very genuine in Dave mm-hmm. too. But there's just that a little, and I mean, it's with any book too. You get a little nervous before it comes out.
Sure.
And especially since we worked so hard to build this world, we didn't want to do anything, you know, disingenuous to it. But yeah, so far the people have been really great about it. A lot of people kind of surprised at the language, like the bad language. And I'm like, first of all,
it's amped up from the first volume.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's still lots of swears in the first volume, and I think that it's also it's not unintentional. It's not like I'm just this like potty mouth, because I actually don't talk like that in my everyday life. I don't pepper every third word with, you know, swears.
Well, you know what? If you're looking for catharsis,
well, that's a good point too.
But, you know, you may want to just let some F-bombs out and horses.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop laughing. Classic, our good friend Classic Materia, who may or may not bleep this in our audio recording. Horses, beef, cock, car, balls, fuck.
Yeah. So I was gonna say it must be therapeutic for you to be able to, you know, get it out.
It is, yeah. And I mean, like, I always say that people kind of comment on, like, oh, the language is funny, and there's all the slang and stuff like that is funny in Dave, and where did you kind of come up with the inspiration to make them like that? And I always said that the world of Dave is very much like if the robots became sentient right now, today,
yeah.
and they had access to every bit of information. So they're brilliant, essentially. They know everything. But at the same time, they take how they speak and how they communicate. The only thing they can pull that from is like YouTube comments and like Twitter and forums. So like that's how they think that's how humanity interacts with each other. And so, you know, in Dave 2, like this is a year later after the invasion, spoiler alert, but there's a,
so like, spoiler alert.
Hello. They've, you know, so their language has evolved a little bit now and they're more comfortable. So it's become, dare I say, a little bit more indulgent.
Gotcha.
So they just love to swear, and they love bodily functions, and they love dicks, and there's a lot of... It's the kind of world that I want to live in.
That's funny. I got a question for you. So one of the funniest parts of our introduction to this book, right, because we've been on board since day one, at least since it's been with IDW, right? So one of the funniest parts about, you know, learning about this book and reading it for the first time is figuring out whether or not to pronounce Dave as Dave and not D4VE.
Oh, it's Dave. Yeah.
I know. And it makes me laugh because now I realize you're a letterer, you know, as part of like your regular every, you know, like day-to-day gig.
Mm-hmm.
Did that play a role in designing the character or the story? Like just the play on how the language of these robots is created and how it looks with the interspersed numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I mean it's basically they talk in this jumbled leet speak, mm-hmm. you know, and so yeah, lettering the book and designing the book too. It was all pretty much just in our hands to do what we wanted with it. As for the title, like I honestly don't ever think that we explored using any other title, and I don't know.
Has anyone ever come up to you at a con and said D4VE?
No, but I've had a fair amount of people say Dave first, and then they kind of backpedal and be like, "Is it Dave?" but yeah, the original logo that I designed actually it read like the word Dave, D-A-V-E.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of did some design thing where I made the A look like a 4, and it just kind of didn't really look that good. So I think just like the book itself, we don't want to make a safe book, so we'll just put a 4 in there.
You just reminded me of how all the vowels are numbers. I thought that was a nice little twist. It confuses me each time. Every time I see Earth as the 34, I always want to say like 34th and like a street name.
Right.
I'm like, oh wait, that's Earth. Yeah.
It's, you know what, it's funny too, because when I wrote the first like couple issues, I do all caps. Like I don't write like uppercase D and then a 4 and then a lowercase V and E.
Like, you don't write always... like you're in the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Dirt's the one that clued us in on that one. Thumbs up to Dirt.
That's the rules. They've got to be all caps. So it's like I learned to type in a totally different way you know, like throwing in the uppercase and weird parts of a sentence, and now it's second nature.
Yeah, that I love, and substituting all the like God references for like Bill Jobs. Gates and Jobs.
You know what's funny is that we've gotten used to that this summer specifically because of Secret Wars. So, you know how everything, you know, they replaced God with Doom.
Doom.
And
yeah.
So it's like Doom, you know, like Doom Bless You or something. And I'm like, so you know, we'd already been kind of trained by reading this and seeing, you know, I'm trying to come up with one, like Jobs Bless You or something, you know?
Yeah.
Glad you brought up being a letter again. I guess that's something I haven't researched enough, but how does one letter a comic?
It's pretty straightforward. It's, lettering's usually the last stage in the art process. And so I will get either an inked page or a colored page, and I will bring it into Illustrator, and I will plop all the text in from the script, and then I'll shape it into the balloons, and make the balloons, and make the tails, make the sound effects, and then off to the printer it goes. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing or hearing lettering be described as basically like art of like drawing the balloons and drawing the font style for the lettering. Mm-hmm. I guess that might have been like, I guess, more old school before the Illustrator and whatnot became prevalent.
For sure. Yeah. Now it's mostly digital. I'd assume mostly. But yeah, and it's got its own skill sets and challenges, and it's definitely a technique, you know, on a learning curve. Like, I started lettering because I was a graphic designer, and an independent publisher that I worked with, my editor at the time was like, oh, well, you're a designer, you can letter it. And I was like, all right, cool. And then I completely bombed. Like, the lettering sucked. So,
wow.
Yeah, so, like, it's got very specific skill set involved.
It's funny, do you have any influences in terms of lettering or letterers? Because I can think of, you know, a few that even today I still remember their names because, you know, their work was, you know, pretty influential and pretty memorable.
Sure.
Do you have any influences or like favorite styles from particular letterers?
Workman, John Workman.
Yes, I was going to say from the Simonson run of Thor. I always go back to that. It's one of my favorite references on the show.
That's kind of like the first name that you go to.
Right.
I really like Russ Wooten's work, and he's one of the top letters today. And like, I love how he can do like real subtle style, and then he can do like really stylized stuff like in Deadly Class, which is gorgeous. Like, you know, a huge inspiration for me is Ed Brisson, who's a writer and letterer, and he's a good friend of mine, and he's been really great to me, helping me get work and stuff like that. I've literally taken some of his lettering and writing jobs, actually. Like, he was on Sons of Anarchy before I took over, and I lettered a bunch of books that he did for Image. But he was someone very early in when I started lettering that was really, you know, inspiring, and I learned a lot from, and just still today I do. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
How
I'm glad you go back that far.
Yeah.
How long does lettering a comic usually take? How many days? Or is it like a day or?
Yeah, I can letter a 22-page issue in a day. Would I like to do it in a day? No. two days would be nice. A week would be amazing. I could sit down in 8 or 9 hours and hammer out a whole issue if it gets to that. The thing with lettering is, and like, not to be a downer, but it's the last step often in the comic book, like putting an issue together, and you get like, if this is the deadline, the print deadline, and this is the start of the project, you know, and it's like everyone else's deadlines shrink a little bit, so then you end up getting a little tiny deadline at the end. So with lettering, I find lettering really relaxing. It lets me work on comics and be involved in comics, and I get to learn things. But at the same time, I kind of get to relax a little bit, and like, it's the only time I get to listen to music while I work, you know, because I don't have to, when I'm writing, I can't. So it's fun. It's a fun way to, you know, pay the bills and get to work in comics. But there's the occasional time where it's like, because it's that last step and the deadlines are so tight that you got to pull all-nighters or you got to upload to, you know, 4 a.m. to printers and stuff like that. So it has its moments, but on the whole, it's a nice change of pace from writing.
And I was going to say, you know what? It's interesting that your graphic design background, more than anything, really plays a role in how you letter things. And it helps your kind of like with the design aesthetic of the page and how things are laid out. Not just in terms of the actual letters themselves, but where they're placed and where you're putting the balloons and what. I mean, I know the artist sometimes dictates where the balloons are, but in terms of just the way things are, like the sound effects might be laid out. That's got to be a huge help.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's very like when you're working on a book, lettering a book, and everyone's really in sync and everyone's really great, then it's very natural and it's kind of like the artist knows where to make the space and the letterer knows where to put it. So it's very, everyone's kind of in sync that way. The one thing that's really, that graphic design helped me out was just knowing the software like right away and knowing, so I had that speed advantage and experience. But also with self-publishing, like when you're doing work for publishers and bigger publishers, you just send them the stuff and then they print it. They deal with all that. But when you're self-publishing and when you're trying to, you're in the front lines of indie comics and stuff like that, you got to print your own stuff and you got to, make sure everything's, to spec with printers. So that was a real advantage for me, was I was able to print my own books and do all the pre-press on books. And I kind of had that knowledge. And like stuff like logo design and trade dress and all that, it all kind of plays into making comics. It's an important part. So I kind of had a leg up doing the design thing for so long before I did comics.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got to be kind of interested in trying to learn lettering now.
Yeah. It's, the thing is, it once you get a hold of the software and once you know the software and the basics and stuff like that, there is a learning curve, which I discovered with lettering. Like I said, the first book I lettered was terrible, horrible. I had to go back and re-letter it. But it's a relatively short learning curve if you practice and kind of, there's so much great online resources and books and stuff like that. So it's definitely, you can pick it up a lot faster than say like spending decades drawing and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I'm waiting to see, the word doom go across page after page of Dave at some point.
Yeah.
our chipmunked co-host has a question. He said, that translates to be when a comic page has a magazine cover or a newspaper, is that from the artist or the letterer?
So like if it's like a design page kind of thing, I guess it depends. Like I know, like for example with Curb Stomp, I had a little bit of input into the logo. Actually it kind of was my logo, but all the design work, like the credits pages and the trade dressing and all that stuff, that came from the publisher's internal designer. But a lot of the times it's the letterer too. Like I've done a ton of logos and credits pages and stuff like that. And actually with Dave, we had one of the back matter pieces that's in the issue is a new actual newspaper page, and so that was all me. So I think it depends really on what publisher you're working at or what capacity. Like if it's really small press or independent comics, then odds are the letterer is probably doing it.
I think that answered his question. He was saying like when a character is reading the magazine.
Yeah, like in the story.
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally, it was like a 20-minute rant on.
We learn more.
I think that is usually the artist. Yeah, I've had a couple of very few instances where there'll be like a small thing that I've got to put on. I'll be lettering a book and they'll be like, "Oh, can you put this thing like a sign on a billboard or like a newspaper thing or something like that?" And it's a pain in the ass, man.
I was gonna say, I'm like, have any artists asked you to put like graffiti or something on a wall because they didn't know how to do it? They said, try to create something. Put that on.
No, I remember in RoboCop Last Stand, I was lettering that one, and there was a couple times where I had to put like the OCP logo on some things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like that was no big deal. It was just throw a logo on it. So I think it really depends. I think most of the time it's safe to assume that the artist is kind of handling that.
Okay.
You just reminded me of one of the last issues of the first volume of Dave, where they're listening to they're watching and listening to, I guess it was like the president on the news feed or whatever, and she's like telling the world how they're being invaded and let's hope for the best or something like that, and all of a sudden the feed cuts off and it's the Windows blue screen.
Yeah.
goodness.
I work in IT, so that struck with me.
Oh, yeah, and then Scotty gets on his knees and he's like, I had Bad Boys.
Bad Boys 4. I still hope they come out with the Bad Boys 4. I'm a fan.
I love Bad Boys 2 is amazing.
Yeah, just in all of it, just how over the top it is.
Yeah.
That's too funny. Now, there's your next licensed book right there.
Yep, Bad Boys.
If anyone can do it, it's IDW.
Exactly. Pitch that, man. Pitch it.
I might have to.
Do you have any secret projects in the works going right now?
Oh, yeah, of course. We're going to ask him. We'll ring the spoiler bell. Don't worry.
This is what I'm doing, but...
I have a lot of secret projects, but they're all secret, so I can't talk about them.
Secrets.
No, I've got, Dave's coming out, Dave 2, that'll take to the end of the year, and then I've got a mini announcing, I believe, in November. Oh my god, my artwork just fell, sorry, that was weird. I've got a mini coming out in February, which is announcing in November, which I can't talk about, but I'm crazy excited about it.
Wow.
And I've got, I might have a license thing coming next summer, which I'm not sure about yet. I probably just jinxed it. Knock on wood. But otherwise, yeah, I'm pitching a lot right now and seeing where things are taking. So
staying busy.
I'm certainly keeping busy. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. And we're really enjoying Dave. Believe me, if you went back into the archives on the YouTube channel and look for when we mention Dave, we've been enjoying this book for quite a while. You know, this character in this world for quite a while.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So is it an ongoing? Or just sort of taking it as it goes?
Dave 2 is 4 issues.
Oh, okay. It's never 4 issues.
Yeah. So I never thought that we would have a Dave 2. I thought it was just going to end at Dave 1. And then IDW was super cool enough to be like, hey, we dig this. Let's do some more. Do you want to do some more? And I was like, let me think about it. No, I was like, hell yeah. So we haven't begun to think about if there's any more after Dave 2.
It's crazy how, you're saying, there may be something next summer. That always trips me out of how the comic calendar works.
Oh, man, it's like a year sometimes. Like Curb Stomp, I remember, was like, we got the green light in, March, and it came out the next March. Like, comics, it takes so long from when you get from pitching stuff to getting a green light, and then for it to come out, it's, clearly under a year. That's what it seems like anyways. And then as soon as it comes out, the whole series is done. 5 months just passes so quick. So it's really interesting how it feels like that. And I look at Dave, we worked on Dave for 2 years pitching it around and stuff before it finally came out.
Do you have any pitching tips for people?
Might not be the right person to ask. But I think the most important thing that I've learned in pitching is to keep it as simple as possible, but also to focus on what your story is about, not what the plot is. I think that is crucial to landing a pitch with a company, but also having it stick with an audience. And I think that's partly why I consider Dave to be one of my more successful works. I think because it's very personal and it has an actual message to it. But I mean, so many different companies have different ways to pitch to them, and so we're in a really complex time right now too, with transmedia things going to different medias and stuff like that. So there's a lot to consider. So I think find something you want to do and focus on it, and really make it mean something in the most simplest way. It's like how can you do that in 2 sentences or 1 page, so that someone has to publish it, and you know what. I haven't cracked the code to pitching yet,
I was about to say, do you practice your pitches with friends and colleagues and even family members?
I practice. One thing as a writing exercise that I do is I write log lines. So basically a very short pitch. If you were to pitch something,
it's like an elevator speech type thing.
Yeah, yeah, and I find that that's something I do when I'm working on pitches or when I just want to warm up for writing, is I'll write a dozen different log lines for the same book and just take different angles from each side. And it's always good to kind of distill your idea. Because, I've had a lot of difficulty pitching Dave, with that elevator pitch, just because I sometimes it takes long for me to, like, explain. Like, I feel like I need to explain that the humans are this and, you know, stuff like that. So it's something that you can always kind of tailor for who you're pitching to or who you're sending it to. Obviously, the most important is an editor, you know, a publisher.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess IDW had approached you about doing a sequel to Dave before it had finished publishing, correct?
Yeah. It was, I think, around when the third issue was coming out. Now, and IDW, it had already come out through Monkey Brain, so the series was totally
right. Complete.
So they had read the entire thing. But I think it was around the third issue, you know, and the sales were good enough that they were, you know, awesome to ask if we wanted to do more. And I had actually, at that point, like, outlined Dave 2 already.
Oh, all right.
And that was, so we did have an idea for a story, but it was one of those things where I outlined it just because we had no idea if it was going to keep going or not. So
sure.
Yeah.
All right. Tim, do you have anything else? I just wanted to touch on a couple of, like, the funniest bits that I saw in, without spoiling too much, of Dave 2 issue number 1, a game of Strip Go Fish. I thought that was pretty pretty funny. I couldn't stop laughing when I read that one.
But you guys never played Strip Go Fish?
No.
No, I'm the only one.
Oh, mercy. Let me see. What else came to mind? Because I was reading this on my way home so that it could refresh my mind, of course, and now I forget what I wanted to touch on real quick.
Like the development with, I forget the son's name.
Oh, Scotty?
Yeah, Scotty. He seems to have his own little side story building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Dirt, do you have any questions you want to email? No, like, send them through the chat and, you know, we'll relay them because we can't understand Chipmunk. I love it.
That might be the ending point there.
That's funny. Wait, hold on. There's, before we go, I had to pull up my copy, my physical copies in, you know, already in a box, but I love the last page of issue 5 of Dave 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to end this the way you ended that series, if we're going to end it, with catchy tagline, something, something, butts, 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 fart, and a horn sounds here.
Yeah. there's a super funny story behind that, too, if I can tell
you. Go for it. I don't want to end it. If we're not ending it, go ahead.
So my editor, IDW, David Hedgecock, was like, cool. So Dave 5, at this point, we already locked down that we're doing Dave 2. And he said, at the back of Dave 5, we're going to have an ad for Dave 2, announcing that that we're going to do more. And I was like, awesome. And he's like, well, you're a designer, so you want to design this ad. And I'm like, yeah, let's just keep it really simple, just a couple words and the logo. Boom, you're done. And then so I sent him this ad. I just whipped it up real quick. And I was trying to think of, I had written out like a dozen different bits of copy to announce Dave 2. And I was having a real hard time with it. So in the meantime, I was like, well, I'll send this to David, and I'll get approval on just the design, very simple. And then once he approves that, then I'll fill it in with the proper copy afterwards. So as placeholder text, I wrote, butts, 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 fart, fart, something, something, whatever it says in the book, right? And then I sent it to him, and I was like, David, this is just placeholder copy, like, I'll fill it in afterwards. And then he got back, and he's like, no, this is perfect, like, we need to run this. Yeah,
I'd say that's a good choice.
And that's how I knew I loved working with him.
That was pretty awesome. I'm glad that we, you know, that we had this chance to talk about this, and that I, you know, and I flipped back to that because I remember that sticking out in my head about how the story, the first volume ended, and how we were teased into waiting for, or, you know, in eager anticipation for Dave 2.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Thanks, man.
So, I want to thank Ryan Ferrier for joining us on tonight's episode.
Thank you guys so much for having me. That's awesome.
No, thank you for being here. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, I'm always with you from now on.
Let people know where they can find you online and on social media.
easiest, best way to get at me is on Twitter. My username there is Ryan Ryder, one word, and that's probably it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't. I'm on Facebook. I don't use Facebook. You can find me at like rfarrier.tumblr.com.
Yes, I was gonna say there's the Dull Boy Times. That's the
Dull Boy Times. Yeah.
Your Tumblr.
Yeah. So Tumblr and Twitter. That's the best way.
So like I told you before the show, you're more than welcome to hop off now if you'd like to, or stick around while we just talk about comic news and reviews for the week.
All right. Well, I should bid you guys adieu, unfortunately.
Ooh. So you're more than welcome to come back on, you know, when you want to. If all you want to do is plug the next issue. It's all good.
Yeah, we should do like a monthly countdown for the rest of the year as each issue comes out.
You'll have me. I'll do it. I'll talk about anything you want to talk about. It doesn't have to be Dave.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
Thanks. All right. Good night.
Have a good one. Yay! That was pretty awesome.
So once again, Dave 2 is out in stores now. Check that out.
Get that. It's IDW.
All right, testing.
You sound a little better, actually.
Well, you sound distant.
Yeah, well, it's a different microphone. I'm using the one that's in the headset instead of the one that's in the...
If you've got... You don't have earbuds, do you?
Well, I've got head...
Oh.
Can you raise the volume a little? You're just a little distant.
Your mom can raise the volume. Device, but,
yeah, you don't sound like a chipmunk, but you're just in the distance now.
Maybe that's where I want to be.
Ah! Click on the settings inside the Hangouts.
I don't see anything for volume.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, there's nothing in Hangouts for volume, at least I don't see any either. While he does that, let me run through the news very quickly. There's a rumor that Marvel is eyeing Rebecca Ferguson for Captain Marvel role.
Okay.
Sebastian Stan doesn't want to be Captain America.
That works for me.
Testing.
Yep.
Now he comes on.
Was that loud enough?
Yeah.
That's pretty loud now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we'll roll with it.
Okay. I do have one piece of news to add, so when you got a lull, let me know.
Okay.
No problem. I was about to say, maybe move the mic down just a little bit.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now I can breathe in it.
I love it. Welcome back, Dirt.
All right.
Scott Glenn is set to return as Stick in Daredevil Season 2.
Cool.
Mystic confirmed as Luke Cage's Misty Knight.
Okay.
Marvel confirms Alfred Woodard's role in Luke Cage.
I love that these established actors are doing stuff in the superhero world.
There's an official video guide to Marvel's Infinity Stones. Okay, whatever. James Gunn says one big Guardians of the Galaxy Easter egg remains hidden.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams tells The Wrap, I'm joining Benedict Cumberbatch in Marvel's Doctor Strange.
That's pretty cool. Like I said before.
What did you say before?
Oh, no, about the actors. About the established actors, about these well-established actors that are doing superhero stuff.
Oh, okay. Director Rupert Wyatt walks away from Gambit. Maybe he's trying to do the same thing Channing Tatum did. I'm gonna walk away and hoping they'll throw more money at me.
Ha!
What about Chicken DC Comics Special 3? Magical Friendship premieres October 18th on Adult Swim. And Roddy Cat adds a note, well, we know which one will die if this is true. Okay.
That's
Supergirl rumored to come to the big screen, but it won't be the TV incarnation because Diane Lane said that the TV and movie universes are staying separate.
Okay.
Rumor that Brainiac could be the Justice League movie villain. Stephen Amell said something controversial, so he's taking a social media break. Avengers star Paul Bettany has the perfect response to Jason Statham's Marvel slams.
That was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Roddy Katz.
What was the slam?
He said how, basically he was talking trash. I don't even say he was talking trash. just saying how all the Marvel movies are just people, all the stunt people at the non-blue, green screens.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know why he's picking at Marvel. You can say that for every action movie.
Right.
Yeah. Just because he actually does his own stunts.
Right. And so Paul Bettany comes back and says, well, there's something along the lines of, well, Jason Statham needs to get an acting double.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeesh. I was just like, ooh, that's pretty good.
And all Star Wars movies coming to Netflix and AMC theaters, question mark?
Ooh.
That's interesting. That'll keep me paying my Netflix subscription, right?
Yeah. Oh, we had a lot of clickbait on our articles here to read over the week. Let's see. We have the December 2015 solicits from all the various publishers.
Did anything pop up for you guys? I didn't really have a chance to look at them.
I haven't had a chance to look either.
I looked, but not off the top of my head. Nothing major. Like, all the surprises. Well, maybe this is probably it in the news.
Yeah, we'll deal with that.
In case it isn't, I'm sure it is, but I just don't feel like scrolling our way to get to it before I forget it. DC announced a couple of cancellations. Was it Lobo, Gotham by Midnight, Doomed, Green Lantern, The Lost Army, Sensation Comics, Batman 66.
Oh, I didn't realize Batman 66 and Sensation were also quitting.
Yeah. Supposedly, 66 is going to do some kind of crossover with Man from U.N.C.L.E., I think.
Right.
And I think there's something else planned for it, like something similar or a replacement or something. And Sensation just sounds like it may be ending. Or I may have that backwards. One of them is continuing in some kind of form, and the other one isn't. But, yeah, I was bummed about... Oh, and Omega Men.
Oh, yeah.
Which, not too big of a surprise, but I was enjoying it.
Hmm.
Supposedly, after the fact, they're saying Green Lantern Lost Army was always intended to be a limited series. Okay.
Whatever.
Doomed, kind of sad about... Actually, Doomed's probably the one I'm most bummed about, just because I was enjoying Doomed.
I didn't read the latest issue. I didn't like the one before as much. I don't know, just like the tone changed on it a little bit. I think maybe because he wasn't scrambling around as crazily in, was issue 3, I think. And then 4 just came out this week, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah,
it was good. It was good. I think it was definitely a return to form, I think. But now you're going to make me have to read the previous issue again, because I don't remember the tone changing so much.
I think... One knock I will say against it that just popped in my mind just now is, while I am enjoying it, you really don't know much about the lead character yet. Like, right. For example, I can't even tell you what his first name is, or his name, period.
It's a weird name. It's Riser, like Paul Riser. Remember, we were talking, making, what was it, Mad About You references when we were initially talking about this book. So
I think in the first issue, which of course was months ago, now I don't remember hardly anything from it. But I remember the first issue they spent a lot of time talking about or showing him, you know, interning at Star Labs and whatnot, mm-hmm. and his aunt, not his Aunt May, but whatever, his equivalent.
The equivalent, right.
But like since then, we haven't spent much time like getting to know this kid.
I mean, we have, but I don't think they've spent nearly enough time building his little section of the universe. And I think that's what you're getting at, and we're 4 issues in, and you know, if you're that kind of if the character's still that distant to you, that's a bad sign.
So that's our deconstruction of Doomed.
And Justice League United was the other one that's canceled.
That's right. People seem to be enjoying that book. I read the first issue and I wasn't super crazy about it.
It's really weird. Like, you have to let things play out in their own time, which is really tough to do on a lot of the books. Stuff happens, and you have no idea why, and it won't be explained the next issue. It might be explained the issue after that, but 3 issues after, then they'll finally explain it. So it's just kind of one of those that I think people just have a hard time with, and they just gave up on it.
Yeah. But yeah, I hear good things about it. That and... I thought there was another book I was saying I heard good things about that's ending, but I can't think of it now. Let's see. I feel bad for Jeff Parker. It's like he just started it and it's ending. But I guess you could say that about the other people's books ending too.
Right.
DC announced Harley's Little Black Book in December, which is, I think, like a bi-monthly Harley Quinn second series. Mary Jane is joining the supporting cast of Invincible Iron Man. All new, all different Marvel Point One takes you 8 months into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Garfield gets a holiday special in December. You can now take the subway to New York Comic Con.
Wait, where?
Did they shut the subway down for that?
It's pretty, no, what the original layout was, the Javits Center's on the far west side of Manhattan, right? And the subway lines generally run along, in that area of Manhattan, run along 8th Avenue. So you're going over to 12th Avenue, basically. So that's four long city blocks that you have to, you know, like going crosstown is a lot longer than going uptown and downtown. So going crosstown, those are pretty long blocks. And during con season, you know, during you know, New York Comic Con, imagine if you're a cosplayer trying to walk that far with your, you know, with your cosplay stuff, you know, because parking, you know, event parking near the Javits is expensive as all get out. I generally park in like a different part of the city if I drive in, because I'm let's say I'm carrying a lot of books to get signed, or I'm just not feeling taking the subway in on a weekend when the schedule's all screwy. I'll park in another part of Manhattan and then take a cab up. It's not the most efficient way to go, but I find that you know, that was the best way to do it until now. Because now, you know, the subway actually takes you pretty much to not quite the doorstep of the Javits, but like a block away, and that's pretty good. That's excellent news for the convention center itself, and for New York Comic Con, which is rapidly approaching. It's only a couple weeks away.
I can just imagine the chaos that the subway system will be now for those what. 4 or 5 days.
Well, I mean, it's just one. What it is there's one line that goes cross town to that. So that one train is going to be packed.
Packed.
Yeah, it's the 7 train. It's the same train that goes out to Citi Field. So, you know, I can imagine, you know, going from the Javits, if the Mets are playing on or around New York Comic Con, and going out to Citi Field for like a playoff game or something right after. Just take one train all the way.
Drawn and Quarterly joins Comixology's digital library. Chewbacca flies solo in a limited series. Dynamite announces Gritty, Depraved Seduction of the Innocent Crime comic. Meet the Twilight Children, Vertigo's upcoming series from Gilbert Hernandez and Darwin Cook, which will be, you can get a sneak peek of it if you do a digital download of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman Overture number 6.
So is that what Edward and Bella's kids, the Twilight Children?
What?
Have to buy it and find out. it's the Twilight, but in the Vertigo setting, so you know it'll be dark and stuff. Marvel to offer all new, all different second issue promotional program. I thought that was kind of one of those things where I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
It's the problem is that always that drop off from issue 1 to issue 2.
Mm-hmm.
You want to advertise issue 2 at the end of issue 1, great. But you need to advertise issue 2 before issue 1 comes out, because we've already ordered 2 before 1 comes out, and we're placing our orders for 3 by the time 1 hits.
Because everything's, you know, 3 months in advance, right?
Yeah.
So actually it'll be like issue 4, right?
Well, it really depends on what week it comes out in the month and when your cutoff for your orders are. But, okay. But you know, even a lot of those Marvel books are issue 1 and issue 2.
Yeah,
in the same month.
Yeah.
So
double shipping.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of them, we didn't really drop them off a whole lot, but we're still at the point where a lot of people haven't signed up for them yet. You know, issue 1 will come out, and then you'll have 10 people going, oh, I want that book. You know, whereas you had 2 people who signed up for it beforehand.
Mm.
You know, it's like that's a problem that constantly happens. But people, they don't know they want it until the first issue comes out. You know,
yeah.
they don't want to say, hey, sign me up for it. Because then they're going to, if they drop it after the first issue, then you've got 2 more months of books you've already ordered waiting to catch up. So, yeah, it's
tough. I was going to say, it's one of my things to do, which is like order all the number ones through Comixology. And because I think they're just now hit, I think September's hit, and I think I've clicked most of them, but I got to double check. And I think October's about to hit Comixology as well. I know your store doesn't use the pull list, But
well, they stopped offering it now.
What's that? Oh, it's in new stores?
Yeah, yeah. If you did not already sign up for it, I think by the middle of 2012, you can't get on the list now.
Oh, that's too bad.
You being a store can't get on a pull list in Comixology?
Right. Comixology has a software system. If you go to pulllist.comixology.com, mm-hmm. you can go in, set up an account, and say, I want these books, and click on them, and it saves them in a list. And a store had the ability to go in and set up a store account where
right.
all the customers could go in and the customers could click, and then the store
right. You link your account to the store, right.
Right, and that's something that they stopped. The website still runs, the software's still there, but they don't allow new stores to sign up for it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, because we looked into that, because that was something that once we saw that, we said, oh, that's great. Like, that would simplify so many things, and especially when your comics come in, you can automatically generate these lists. So you know who's getting what when you file them away, but
right.
they don't offer it to new stores anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
That's probably one of those things where they're like, yeah, we don't feel like supporting it anymore. It takes up too much time.
Well, that's
like the Windows 8 app for Comixology?
I hate to say it, Tim is probably dead on with that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I just know how tech stuff works and all that good stuff. It's like, yeah, we don't feel like supporting that anymore. We'll just discontinue it.
Well, what's funny is that, you know, every month, you know, almost like clockwork, the next month's worth of stuff that you can get to comes out. So they support it to a certain extent, but they're not advancing it. They're not, you know, fixing any glitches and whatnot, you know?
I think they keep the system running more because it runs as a backbone to the digital side mm-hmm. so that you can go and see when a book is coming out. So you know that it helps them to organize their lists internally of what's coming out on what date and when we need to have them. And, you know, if it's going to ship, then they need to have the digital files on their end so that they can sell it, you know, that type of stuff.
Right.
So I think it's tied into all of that system. So it's still there and exists because they use it themselves internally.
Gotcha.
But they just don't open it up for new stores to run those lists anymore.
That's really way too – that's bad. That's too bad.
Yeah.
First look at Sam Wilson, Captain America number one. Roddy Cat has a note that says, wait, D-Man? Yes, D-Man is in
the
supporting character.
Dennis Dunphy! Oh.
This is for Dirt. G.I. Joe creators seek to reobtain rights from Hasbro.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently there was some sort of copyright law change that went in maybe even like 2 decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
I forget when it was, but it says 35 years after you sell the rights to the company, you have the ability to get the rights back through some whatever process. And so he came up with the basic ideas for G.I. Joe, even though Hasbro actually came up with the name G.I. Joe and certain specific characters. The idea came from him, and so he's attempting to get the rights back so that he can do it himself.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And last bit of news that came, I think, before we start recording tonight. All-female Justice League coming to DC in 3001.
Are they going to call it J-Force?
That what? Being Justice League 3001. I didn't even think about that, but yeah. some variant corner news. Phil Hester's 10 favorite sketches from his 98 Kirby's project. Star Wars number 10 action figure variants. Hulk, Venom, Guardians of Infinity get totally awesome hip-hop variant covers.
Cool.
Walter Simonson's Shy or She cover, the way you'll never be able to see it again.
Yeah.
And time for me to read our ad for tonight.
Wait, before you do...
Oh, yeah, that's about your news.
I've got... It's actually variant news. Diamond sent out a message earlier saying that Marvel is allowing a store-specific variant coming to Star Wars Vader Down number 1. Retailers have the ability to either choose from a list of artists supplied by Marvel and Lucas in order to create an exclusive retailer variant, or... There is an exclusive action figure line, Wave 1 variant, that can put your comic book shop logo on the front. So it looks like it's like on sale at your store, I guess, as part of the action figure package. And so both of those are now open for ordering for Vader Down number 1. And the artwork for the action figure line Wave 1 variant will be shown tomorrow, September 18th. It will be released, so we can get a sneak peek at that.
Ooh.
It seems, I mean, it's one of those things that sounds cool in theory, but like how you broke down all the, like, the ordering for the hip-hop variants, it just sounds like it's going to be a headache.
Well, this is different because this is being a retailer variant.
Yeah.
You basically enter a contract to buy like 500 copies of the variant that is specific to your store.
You don't have to buy like 500 issues of Star Wars.
No, it's not something that unlocks. It's something that you're just straight out buying it. You're basically making a contract to just buy a certain number of issues directly from them with that. So, I mean, you're going to pay a price for the artwork, and you're paying a price for the customization of it, but then you get those are exclusive to you, and nobody else can buy those. So if anybody wants them, they come directly through you. It's kind of like the Back to the Future variant, the number one that we decided to order for our store. We're going to get 500 copies of this cover, this specific cover that has our store logo on it. Mm-hmm. And no one else, you know, will be able to order that. The only way people can get it is by ordering it through our store. So we had to enter a contract just basically saying that we'll pay you this much money to set it up, and we will order 500 copies, and they will ship them to us, and we are the only ones who can sell them.
I just wonder, like, of the 500 of the Back to the Future, how many you think you sold?
You know, it's one of those things where we looked at the cost breakdown of it, and if we sell 200 of the 500, then we pretty much break even.
Wow.
Which isn't
bad, really.
I mean, 200
is still a lot. Like,
That's a lot of books, but it's also Back to the Future number one, and with a store like ours with movies and toys and video games, it seems like the type of thing that we can always have a stack on the counter, and every week, you know, we'll be selling a handful of copies. So I think there will be a certain, you know, rush right at the beginning, and we may be able to sell the 200 right away, but even if we don't, we think it'll just be a perennial item that people, you know, 5 years from now, someone will go, oh, Back to the Future number one, that's, yeah, I'll take one of those. You know, we just kind of see it as one of those type things.
Okay.
Cool.
So, I guess check with your local retailer to see if they'll be
For the people on the show, not the people watching, but we do have an advanced copy of Back to the Future number one that was sent to us that's in our Dropbox folders, and it actually has all of the variant covers, including all the store variants, in the PDF file.
Oh, wow.
So we have the ability to go through and see all of those ahead of time. And some stores actually did their own original artwork, and some stores were like us, where we used the company's template of him shopping at a future comic book store and put the store logo on it.
We'll be checking that out.
Yeah, we will.
All right, that's what I got.
All right. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to ESPN.us at CSPN.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping.
Is that the end?
That is the end.
There you go.
I did not read too much this week.
I read a bunch. I didn't even have a chance to type it in.
I didn't type it in either. But I didn't read very many, so it's all right.
Let's see. Open my list up here. Where should we start? Anyone have one that's on the tip of their tongue?
I got a pull-up comic list.
I'll start with Harley Quinn number 20, which I reviewed on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com.
Okay. Did you get that through NetGalley?
No, I got it as a physical.
Okay.
The only NetGalley one I got early was the Martian Manhunter number 4 or 3. 3. Yeah. And they've actually cut down on my physical copies, because I guess they realize I haven't been reviewing that many of them.
No, no!
Well, it's like the first couple of weeks, they were sending me like everything that came out that week. So I'd like pick the ones I liked and read them. Then it went down from all of them to like 6. And then like some of the 6 ones weren't things I was currently reading. So then this week it was 4. So I'm making a point. I'm gonna make sure to I'm gonna make sure to read all 4 and do write reviews for all 4. See if I can get it climbed back up some. But Harley Quinn was 1, and I haven't currently been reading Harley Quinn like I said in my review. But I enjoyed this issue. As Harley Quinn, as you see from the cover, it goes to Hollywood to search for a mother's daughter that's out there, and I guess the mother wants her daughter returned home. So it's basically what you can expect: Harley getting into hijinks out in Los Angeles, going to a party with people partying. You see on the first page that it looks like she's on an airplane as a stewardess with a bunch of comic book heroes from the DC universe. I guess it of course it's not actually the heroes and villains, it's people in dress up for con or whatever. So that's going on. She runs into a cowboy, a guy that's dressed like a cowboy that she ends up like hanging out with for the majority of the issue. She finds the daughter, plans to take her back home, but then she runs into Deadshot shows up because I guess he is trying to get the same bounty as her, so her old buddy from the Suicide Squad. And as I said in my review, I assume next issue there's gonna be fighting between her and Deadshot, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot of jokes or mix of jokes and fighting. And Jimmy Palmiotti, the co-writer on the book, was nice enough to comment on my review. There will be fighting.
Nice!
So, I might actually keep reading that. Oh, and the art by John Timms, who I like. He is currently writing or doing the art for Inhumans, Attilan Rising over at Marvel.
Cool.
I like his art. So that was 1 of 4. Another of the 4 was Robin, Son of Batman, number 4.
Which I read this.
It's sort of the same formula. He starts with some flashbacks of Damian back when he was more of a punk, I guess.
Well, he was still really an Al Ghul as opposed to
a Damian. So it's the Year of Blood, I think is the storyline.
Right.
Basically, you could say like his redemption quest, and him and his bat creature Gladiator and
Goliath.
What did I say?
Gladiator.
Damn it! I think I've been saying Gladiator. Hope I didn't say that in my review.
Now next week it'll be 2 books that you get from DC.
Well, because speaking of NetGalley, I got some NetGalley stuff to review of theirs too. So. Awesome. But so Goliath and Nobody, who I guess is like the daughter of a bounty hunter, it's like a big bounty hunter week on DC. Mm. Deathstroke, as you see on the cover, shows up because I guess somehow he's tied with Nobody, and there's like a big fight. Robin pays him to leave, so he does. And at the end of the issue, they discover a Lazarus pit, which I was just like, that happens all the time, right? Lazarus pits scattered all across the DC universe.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think it's one of those books where it doesn't stand out like, oh, this was the most amazing thing I read this week or whatever. But it was one of those where it was enjoyable. There was nothing that offended me because it was so terribly done, you know? It was just an enjoyable, easy-to-read, fun story that had a good little Deathstroke interaction. So I enjoyed it.
I was going to say what I enjoyed about this book was the fun parts. I enjoyed the funny little kind of side like side parts of the story where Robin, where Damian tries to feed Goliath some blue crabs or crabs, like live crabs. He's like, "You're a carnivore, you figure it out." And that I thought was genius. And then obviously Goliath runs into some issues trying to eat live crabs for the first time. So I thought that part made me laugh, and it gave me kind of a renewed sense that this book, had something to it, as opposed, instead of just. I think my biggest criticism with this book was that sometimes the art was hard to follow.
Yeah,
I said that too.
Right, and I think this issue wasn't as bad as it has been. So
it was just confusing during the fight scenes to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of times during the fights when things get really chaotic,
mm-hmm.
Was it Pat Gray? What's
Mick Gray?
Mick Gray. Okay. I think in his mind it makes a lot more sense what the motion is and how people are moving around, but when I'm reading it, I really don't. I can't follow like what exactly is going on. I can just see, well, there's some arms flailing, and I think mm-hmm. that's a foot, so there must be a fight going on.
I made a point of like there's like a 4-panel fight sequence that we're following, and from one panel to the next, Deathstroke's holding two weapons in his hands in one panel, and then the next panel, both weapons have been switched to the opposite hand, which I guess could have happened if he was playing, he was juggling, but. There was no flow to show how that would have occurred.
Yeah,
gotcha. Well, I mean, like I said, I thought the funny bits really helped me, engage with the story and keep reading, even though the art at times, kind of led me, to not understand what was going on. But this was, I think, a better issue than the last one, because I know I've had some kind of harsh criticism for some of the issues of this book.
So, look for two more reviews this week for Superman Wonder Woman 21, I think? 22? 20-something?
21.
21. And Wonder Woman 44.
Okay.
Have you read either one of them yet?
I have not.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Well, I did read Superman Wonder Woman.
Yeah, so did I.
And I'll just add that, again, this is another book that's apparently part of the overall story that we've seen in Action and what was it? Superman, Batman? Was that the other
yes.
one? Yeah. This yeah. one ties
They're
in.
Tied in.
Yes, with another ending that plays mm-hmm. into that. So
it basically all end at the same point. And
so it ties with Superman, Batman, and or Batman, Superman, and Action.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So I thought that was I thought that was kind of neat that that these books really kind of weave into each other at this point.
Yeah, I have to say that the issue overall I thought was okay, but again,
yes.
it was one of those that wasn't spectacular. It didn't blow me away. It's the best thing I read this week, but it was fine. Mm-hmm. every part of it just kind of fell into place, and I was okay with it overall. But then I got to that ending, and you see the guy jump into that pink room, whatever the Pepto Bismol room, and that actually made me like, oh wow, okay, all right. Now I'm excited at the end of this book. So more excited for the ending than the actual story. Although I have to say, Firestorm disappears in this issue, and he doesn't come back. So he's still hidden away somewhere.
Right. What's going on here? All right, cool. Let's see. What else?
I need to read Batman and Superman from, I think it was last week or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read Martian Manhunter?
No.
Oh.
Is that out this week?
Yeah, that was out this week.
I still haven't read that.
Oh. And this is another good one. This one I would edge a little bit above the other two, okay. mainly because we get Mr. Biscuits in a big fight.
Mr. Biscuits throws down, huh?
He does. Mr. Biscuits you don't want to mess with Mr. Biscuits, I can tell you that much.
All right.
But I said something, I think when the last issue came out, I don't remember if I was out somewhere or what the deal was, but I wasn't on the show. But I tweeted to you guys that this Martian Manhunter plays out like an early Vertigo book, just without the boobs and the swearing.
Right.
And that I think that's still reigning true. There's still there's so many mind games that's going on, and this issue with Martian Manhunter, it's not a spoiler anymore. This has been revealed, I think, in the second issue, and it's still playing out, that Martian Manhunter, he appeared to kill himself, but actually what he did is he had dispersed himself into many different bodies. Like, he split into six different personalities or in these different bodies because he was trying to hide himself, because he knew that he was going to become this weapon of part of the Martian invasion. And so now the personalities, these different bodies, are starting to gravitate back together. And as they are, they're being attacked by the rest of the incoming invasion force from the Martian army. And I just really like the way this story is playing out. There's just something about the awkwardness of it, the goofiness of it, the way that the characters, none of these people who are an aspect of Martian Manhunter know that they're an aspect of Martian Manhunter until something snaps and it's revealed to them that, hey, that's who you are. And we're starting to see how his powers work, because as these characters start to turn back to their Martian side, they don't understand how the powers work. So another one who does understand the powers is, you know, kind of explaining to him how to do this, how you do that, which I think is good for the character, because he has been one of those... People know he's a shapeshifter, he's an alien. You get bonus points if you remember Bloodwind from the mid-90s, but otherwise, you know, he's just kind of like, he's the Green Superman, you know. Mm-hmm. So this helps to further define who the character is and what he actually does, which I enjoy a lot. And so, yeah, this is one of these, it's like a sleeper favorite of mine. Again, it's no one issue stands out as like, that's the greatest thing I've ever read. Mm-hmm. But the story overall, I just really enjoy.
Yeah. I'm shocked that I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, because it's one of those books when they announced it, and you're just like, oh, really? Okay, well, that'll get like six issues and disappear, right?
Right.
But it's actually really enjoyable.
Yeah, I had someone recommend I read it, and I read the first issue, and I was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of cool. I was like, but still, I was like, yeah, I probably still won't keep up with it just because just have so much to read.
Right.
And then when DC kind of suggested I read it, yeah, I did the, you know, went through two, did the third, so I was like, yep, this is fun. I'm glad it wasn't on the chopping block, by the way.
Yes, it survived, yeah.
That's good.
Off topic, but it seems Todd McFarlane's Twitter account's been hacked.
Yeah, well, that's what he wants you to think.
No! Ah! That's funny. All right.
You got Dave?
I'm taking a look at the list now. I wanted to mention that the Paybacks came out this week.
Oh, yes.
In physical form.
I bought a physical copy today. It's downstairs, my physical copy.
Nice.
And I got the last one in the store, apparently.
That's awesome. I'm glad to see people were picking this up. And I actually, on my recommendation, one of the other store regulars picked this up because I said that... you know, the creator sold me on this without me, you know, reading too much, and you know, like without me having to even read it. But you know, after reading it, I was sold. It's a great story, great concept.
I'm looking at Tom McFarlane's Twitter, and yeah, I'm pretty sure he's been hacked. Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I can't even read these out loud.
Really? All right, now I'm gonna log.
Everybody, look, it's at Todd_McFarlane.
Oh my.
It's a verified Twitter account, but it says Todd McFarlane, but I'm not a rapper.
Oh,
is that his bio?
Yeah, his bio says, but I'm not a rapper.
I didn't even check the bio.
That's funny.
I'm gonna start.
I was about to say, speaking of the Paybacks, the writer of the Paybacks, Donnie Cates, tweeted out, "You guys, the Drake hacked Todd McFarlane just followed me. I'm going in. Wish me luck." I love it. Love it.
Says. We're distracted by foolishness on the timeline.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, no. Yeah, with that, he's definitely hacked. I love it. Love it. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, I guess Don said if one image founder is going to block me, I'll get the other to follow me.
Oh, no. That is too funny. Look at this timeline.
Right? It's like he didn't use it. You know, it's like March is the last time he had any tweets. And then it's like an hour ago he starts typing out these tweets.
Oh no! Soon enough, this account is going to start quoting rap lyrics. Oh my goodness! But I'm not a rapper. I love it. I love it. Oh, I just tweeted out something new.
Starts tweet that column to follow.
Oh no! Anyway, while we're dealing with this insanity, let me see if I can throw out a book that I read this week that I had some fun with. Let's see. So I did talk about the paybacks. How about
review for that would be hopefully coming up over the weekend too.
How about something we've been waiting for a long, long time? And I'm talking specifically about Captain America White Number 1 by the team of Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb. I did get a physical copy of this. This book has been in the works since 2007 or 2008. I think it was announced in 2008.
It was like a zero issue came out, right?
Yes, yeah, zero issue came out that was actually reprinted in this book. But it took a long time for the first issue to come out. And, you know, aside from a couple of kind of odd takes that that Jeff Loeb kind of has with the Steve Rogers character, I like this book overall. There's a couple of small, like, kind of quirks in the character of Steve Rogers that that Loeb kind of, you know, kind of mentions in passing that kind of struck me as a kind of being off-key or off-character. But otherwise... you know, it was a good read. I'm a fan of these mood or color books of you know that Loeb and Sale have done for the Marvel characters. I have copies. You know, I have them all: Hulk Gray, Spider-Man Blue, which is really, really good, by the way. You know, it's kind of a love letter to Gwen Stacy, Spider-Man Blue. I'd highly recommend that one. But yeah, this is a good start. I mean, we already knew how Sale would portray the lead characters, you know, Captain America and Bucky, in this from the Zero issue. But it was nice to see, you know, Sale and his rendition of Marvel characters again after a long, long hiatus. It was just a fun read. I definitely recommend it. I think people will be familiar with some of the beats in the story from the movie. From the Captain America movies, but this is definitely entrenched in Marvel 616 continuity. So, you know, you have to be kind of familiar with some of the original World War II era, or at least like the Marvel characters that are set in the World War II era, like OG Nick Fury and Dum Dum Dugan pre-LMD. So, you know, I like this book. It was a fun book. Definitely a candidate for Click of the Week this week for me.
And you definitely got a lot of stuff packed into a book for $4.99.
Yes.
It is a thick, heavy issue.
They had that same Scotty Young cover at my shop today, and I almost bought it.
Yeah, that's the one I took home.
I would have loved to get that one.
Well, you should have come to my shop then.
Well, you know, for flying out to Illinois, maybe. You know? So anyway, let's see. What else? How about... Guardians of Nowhere number 4. I wanted to mention this specifically because this has been an ongoing thread in our conversations about the Bendis scripted Secret Wars books, where you know we have suspected for a long time now that the Bendis books would be the ones that would carry some sort of lasting impact into all new, all different Marvel, and. We definitely know that Old Man Logan's going to be emerging into all new, all different from the promotional artwork. We don't know yet how that's actually going to happen or what role he's going to play, but we know that he's going to emerge in all new, all different. In this book, three quarters of this book is a mysterious new character who's not speaking intelligibly to either the characters in the book or to us. You know, we can't understand what this character is saying. It's a lot of fighting and lots of cosmic power death being dished out by this mysterious character. And, you know, we get to a point where, you know, this book is a big, long fight scene, and spoiler alert, one of the 616 Marvel characters that Doctor Strange had cast to the Four Winds in Secret Wars number 4, was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? One of those characters shows up. Spoiler alert. It's the one you think would probably show up in a Guardians book. Shows up here. And, you know, we get to the ending of the story where, you know, the team is sort of reformed, and the ending of the book, and the book ends with, to be concluded in Secret Wars and Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. So, do we have any real consequences emanating from this book that are sure to be reflected in All New, All Different? Possibly. So, I think it was probably wise to stick with this book, but unfortunately, I think the payoff, I don't know how much of a payoff there's going to be in Secret Wars, because this series is pretty difficult to follow. Yes, we're going to see more of Yotat, that awfully named character. We're probably going to see much more of this mysterious blue person who's most likely Kree, and it's almost definitely Kree based off of what happens in the book. But I'm not spoiling anything. She's blue, you know? You know, if I recall correctly, they've already announced that the new Guardians will not be led by Star-Lord.
Yeah, Rocket Raccoon.
Right, so 8 months from now, or 8 months from the end of Secret Wars, something's going to happen where this incarnation, or this group of Guardians that we're used to, is going to be altered fairly radically without, you know, the lead character of the movie no longer leading the team.
Hey, considering the way they've been publishing this summer, it very well could be 8 months until we get done with Secret Wars.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said the person that shows up was who you think would show up in a Guardians of the Galaxy book, so I'm not going to say who that person is, but mm-hmm. I'm assuming that person just was in a series that just, a tie-in series that just ended a week or so ago.
Possibly. Possibly. So that's that. How about we, did anyone else read Infinity Gauntlet number 4?
Nope.
Nope.
Dang.
I only read one Marvel book this week, just to throw that out there.
Yeah, because you're trying to catch up on DC, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Trying to keep my my habits fed.
There you go. So just very quickly on Infinity Gauntlet number 4, this is still a very interesting book to read. Duggan does a very good job of, you know, keeping your interest in these characters alive, but my biggest problem with this issue, is Dustin Weaver's layouts. And we were talking before about how jumbled some of the artwork in Robin Son of Batman is, and how hard it is to decipher who's doing what and what's happening. Unfortunately, in this issue, Weaver decides to really jam-pack the story and puts a lot of action into these panels, and at certain points, it's just hard to decipher. And you know, it's possible that you know my you know reading this on you know electronically on a small screen, you know, biases you know how I approach some of these books and makes me want to crack open my physical copy and see if the experience changes at all. But I think that you know I was pretty critical of how the book itself was. Oh, you know what? My store didn't get one of its small boxes, and that's why I didn't really have a chance to compare the physical copy. But like I said, in my opinion, at least, some of these panels are so jam packed and on the small side that it's just hard to decipher what's going on. But you know, otherwise, the story itself we're still following this family of Novas with some kind of cool additions to the cast, you know, namely members of the Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, we still have that. This issue isn't as funny as the last issue, because if you recall the last issue, we had a lot of internal monologue from Thanos. I don't know if you guys remember that, where he says, yeah, "I'm going to kill the tree first." So, you know, there's none of that in this. And, you know, there isn't as much heart in this book. There's a lot of action and kind of moving the story along. So, you know, it does its job, but, it you know, I didn't feel particularly impressed by the book. So, you know, kind of a mild disappointment for me. But, you know, I'm still going to read number 5.
Does it feel like it's going to have any sort of lasting ramifications after Secret Wars, or does it feel like another one of those that's just its own?
This one, it's hard to tell. Why? Because the Novas are generally, or at least in the space books, like Guardians of Nowhere, the Novas, you know, have seen kind of like an increased presence in the Secret Wars space character books. And, you know, we know that the new Nova book is going to involve Sam Alexander and his father, so who knows, maybe some of these, Nova characters might emerge in the Nova books.
Okay.
So that might be where, you know, we get some ramifications of this story. It's hard to tell. You know,
is there another issue with this?
Yeah, there's one more. At least one more. Okay. Oh, no, it's just to be concluded, so there's one more.
Gotcha. All right. Let's see, Tokyo Ghost number 1. I read.
Was that exceptionally good?
Yes.
Okay, I'll say this. We had, like, maybe 2 people ask for it before it came out, and so we didn't order it very heavily, and then the day it came out, we just had person after person going, hey, do you have Tokyo Ghost? Hey, do you have that Tokyo Ghost book? Hey, do you have that? And it's like, well, we sold them all because none of you people asked for it. So we ordered a bunch more copies coming in the next week or two, but... Like, how, for some reason, something about this book just took off like fire on Wednesday.
Download.
I wonder.
Download. I'm going to have to take a look at this now.
I wonder if it's Sean Gordon Murphy being on as art, because it seems like everything he does.
I do like his artwork, yeah.
So if you like, you know, Chrononauts and his other work, the art is basically similar. I will say, even though I've fallen way behind on Remender's image stuff, like Deadly Class and Black Science, when they both came out, I enjoyed those, and, like, you know, over time and too many books just kind of fell by the wayside. I remember I did try Low, and I got through, like, the first couple pages, and I was just like, nah.
Yeah.
But this falls in the good Remender category as far as, like, Black Science and, what's the other one? Deadly Class. That was my dog shaking. His collar. So, quick rundown of the issue. It's set in the far future where people are addicted to their electronic devices. And
what? That's not that far future.
Well, they're like super. Like if I think people are. There's something.
You mean like, it's tomorrow?
There's some kind of drug. I can't remember the name of right now that people also take. So basically, it's like this, like Los Angeles of the future. This one guy's company, like, controls everything and it keeps feeding people. And he has his constables, Debbie Decay and Led Dent. Led Dent's the guy on that motorcycle, and Debbie is on his back. If you look at the cover,
It's kind of Akira inspired.
Yeah. So Led is one of the main people plugged in and. Is like in a like zombie state where all he wants to do is just kind of sit and watch and multitask 80 different things being fed to him at one time, like YouTube, whatever the future version of YouTube and social media streams and TV shows and reality TV and they're kind of like the law of the land where they go and hunt down. They're going and hunting down this. Another guy whose name I can't remember, but this guy treats the world like a video game, and he can jump inside other people's bodies as long as they're, like, you know, plugged into the tech and control them. So they're, like, hunting him down, and he can control... Debbie is the only one that isn't plugged in like everyone else, and she's trying to, like... She wants to rescue Led because she's in love with Led, and she's trying to get the man that he previously was before being addicted to all this stuff. And their journey is going to take them to Tokyo, which is the last place on the planet that isn't this technological wonderland. And in the interviews and whatnot, Remender's kind of teases it as, like, issue one is totally different from issue two, and two is going to be totally different from three. But either way, it seems like a fun kind of look at how he's going to handle, like I said, people and being constantly attuned to all this different multitasking and technology. And it seems kind of right up his alley as far as the kind of stuff, the subject matter he likes to tackle.
This art is really good.
Yeah, it's like Sean Murphy art.
Right, but it's not as murky. It's not as murky as The Wake was.
Yeah, I remember I tried to get. I think The Wake was actually the first book of his that he did the art of that I tried. Maybe besides like a fill-in on Batman or whatever he did, but yeah, I couldn't get into The Wake.
It was murky because of the subject matter, which is, you know, it's a lot of it is dealing with underwater. I mean. And you know, this is bright, and you know, the lines are pretty sharp and crisp, and you know, he definitely has some stylistic quirks, you know, in terms of how he draws people and things. But you know, this is pretty good. I'm probably gonna look for this physical copy of this weekend.
Yeah, my store had. It's funny, when I was checking out, he had it. I don't know if it was just in one issue or one copy or a couple of them hanging on the wall next to the register, I guess kind of like the impulse buy, that like right. Checkout counter. And I asked him, I asked how the feedback had been on it. And he was like, you know, he's had a couple people check it out. He was like, you know, it's just been one day so far. But I told him I had read it and I enjoyed it. So,
cool. Yeah. So did any of you guys read Star Wars number 9?
Yes.
That would be the one Marvel book I read. Glad I did.
So, alright. Jerry, you want to take the lead on this one?
Well, you sounded like you had a point you wanted to make.
No, I mean, it was just sort of like, you know, it's the next issue that follows and continues a bunch of the plot lines that had been established in the previous issue. We have confrontation between Princess Leia, Han Solo, and who we find to be Han Solo's ex-wife, or partial, maybe ex-wife, or well, separated.
Sana Solo, she claims that she's still his wife.
Right. So is it Sana or Sana or whatever?
I just assume Sana. I mean,
Sana. That's good. Yeah. Sana Solo. You know, she basically calls in the Empire and. Thereafter, Leia and Han Solo, and of course, they have to beat a hasty retreat. That's their part of the story. The part of the story that's really that covers the bulk of the book is Luke had originally in the last issue tried to make his way to Coruscant, of course, the center of the freaking Empire. I think that was my biggest issue with that step in logic in the last issue. So now, you know, Luke is neck deep in this doo-doo, and he's lost his lightsaber, and he's on the road to get it back and finds himself, you know, on a chase that leads him into the underworld of this particular moon. And, you know, do you want to take it from there?
Well, this was the part of the storyline that I didn't care for as much, because it seems like Luke is on this path of making terrible decisions after terrible decisions, and you know, falling into one problem after another mistake, and
right.
He basically finds himself in the lair of a hut.
Right.
And I don't want to give too much of it away, other than to say that he starts to dabble more in his force powers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it. He makes a comment about how, you know, I was just shooting. I didn't know what I was doing. And the guy's like, no, you got to use your powers. You got to use your powers. And he's able to use them. And he apparently, when he uses the force, it's much more powerful than what was expected of him. And instead of setting off one device, he sets off a whole room full of them, you know, like a dozen of them, whatever. So he's a much more powerful Jedi than people, than I guess the Jedis were for people who knew Jedis or whatever. So, I mean, that gives you a little insight into Luke's Jedi abilities and why he's a standout character opposed to anyone else who might be a Jedi. But, you know, I'm just... He goes in the bar, he gets in the fight, the lightsaber's stolen, he goes on this chase, he gets it back, but it crashes, he finds himself captured. You know, it's just like one thing after another after another. The one thing that I do look forward to is the rescue team that's sent to retrieve him. I am looking forward to.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, you know, it did take me a half second to reset my thinking and remember when this book is set. You know, this book is set between Star Wars and Empire.
Right.
And if you remember what Luke Skywalker was like at the end of Star Wars, it starts to make more sense. And you just kind of have to reset your thinking when you're reading this. You took the words right out of my mouth when you realize who's going to end up going in on the rescue mission, and let's just say that we've seen this particular group of characters before, and they definitely have interesting interactions.
I'm mad that I couldn't decipher who the rescue team would be before I flipped the page. Like, I was trying to I was sitting there thinking, I was like, who the hell could it be?
Really?
Yeah. That turned the page, and I was like,
kind of gave it away.
I didn't know what the hell that was. I was like, is that Joy? Then I turned the page, I was like, oh, yeah. What I also like about that is, I jot down in my notes, I'm going to try to review that too. What did I say? Oh, I like how, like I said, it takes place between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And it's like, sure, Chewbacca knows of Luke, because they, you know, they blew the Death Star together and whatnot, but it's not like they're buddy-buddy like he is with Han, yet he's willing to go risk his life to go retrieve Luke. And I thought that was kind of cool. Because they're like, you know, no one's dumb enough or brave enough to go on this suicide mission. It's like,
well,
here he comes, says who?
Does the holiday special still stand? Does Chewbacca have a wife and a son and a grandfather living in his treehouse? I mean, maybe he is a family guy that doesn't want to see the kid, you know, get too deep in trouble.
But you have to remember also, Luke let him win. So that must mean a lot.
That is true.
So that must mean a lot.
Overall, I enjoyed it, but I did not enjoy it as much as the other Star Wars book this week.
Oh.
You didn't read Lando?
I didn't.
Oh.
I thought I picked the right Star Wars book to read. I told you I only read one Marvel book this week. I was like, I've read a couple of DC books. I read an Image book. I was like, okay, I got time for one Marvel book. Okay, it's got to be Star Wars.
Well, I mean, it wasn't the worst pick, you know. It's good. But this one is kind of crazy. I happen to have preferred the previous issue to this one, but this was still pretty good.
Yeah, the only issue I really had with this was with the two Black Panthers that are hard to tell apart. And, and then, you know, I guess we can spoil it. Go ahead and ring the bell.
Ring the bell!
The residual force energy from all the Sith antiquities on this ship that belongs to Emperor Palpatine is starting to corrupt the Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. And so you have one of them first turns on the other, and then they both appear to team up. And, you know, Lando and that Oompa Loompa, whatever that guy's name is, you know, they have to figure out...
I think it's a lady. Doesn't he return... He refers to Corin as a she. That's kind of scary. But go on.
But anyway... And then in the middle of all of this mess, the bounty hunter that's been sent after them shows up, and his interaction with the bounty hunter is what made my day. Because there's a, she takes the bounty hunter takes off the helmet And you just have this panel where Lando's staring at her, and he's got this confused look on his face. And then suddenly in the very next panel, you see him going, well, hey, hey, hey. And it's it was just like the voice in my head. I could totally see him delivering that line. Like, that was... Then From I love that issue. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the Black Panthers fight, because they were bad enough. I mean, they were...
just hand-to-hand, right? Strictly hand-to-hand.
Yeah. And the way they were taking out the Imperial Guards and everything, so grabbing a lightsaber and a particular lightsaber,
yeah,
by the way.
Double-bladed.
I hate the fact that it, like, next issue is the last issue, right? It's only five?
Yes. It's just to be concluded.
Because I love this series. Like, this series has been my favorite Star Wars thing.
Right. I was going to say is I definitely agree. They picked... You know how we were enamored with Cassidy's art on the main Star Wars series, and I think Eminem has definitely picked up that ball and started to run with it. Maleev's art on this is so tonally perfect, and his likeness of Billy Dee Williams is so expressive. It's not it's not photorealistic, but it's excellent because it's so expressive. And I'm looking at that page that you're referring to, where he has this quizzical look. Yeah. It's like crossed with like, what the F? And then he goes, well, hey, hey, hey. I don't want to make it sound like Fat Albert, but
hey.
But at the end of the day, like you said, you hear Billy Dee Williams in your head saying these lines. And that's what makes this book for me, is that the likeness and soul script in terms of what he has Lando say and how he has him act is so spot on.
So this is even one of those, I like it so much I may even grab the trade.
Nice.
Just because I know it's like one of those, you see a really good movie, you know you want to watch it again. There's some movies that are so good you never want to watch them again. Mm-hmm. But this one is just, it feels like one of those things where I'm going to have an afternoon, an hour to kill, whatever. I'm going to pull it out and read it every so often. Unless the ending is terrible.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, this is going to be a great book.
Let's hope not. I'm glad we talked about that. That was a pretty good read.
That would suck to kill it for four issues and then the landing.
Yeah, seriously.
Quick news. NBC is supposedly doing a Taken prequel series, or ordered a Taken prequel series. Not sure how that works.
Taken, you mean the whatchamacallit?
Liam Neeson.
The I've got special skills, all that stuff. Jeez.
The one and only, and supposedly there's a Booster Gold Blue Beetle movie in the works.
Oh, my God.
Combat Resources has a poll up.
All right.
It says, Warner Brothers and Greg Berlanti developing a feature film starring Booster Gold and Blue Beetle.
Does it say for sure which Blue Beetle?
I just got the main artwork up.
The artwork that they used is Jamie or Jaime or whatever his name was, but...
It says, despite earlier rumors of the cinematic DC Universe's no humor policy, the report claims the upcoming film will, in fact, retain this comedic take, calling the pitch a superhero buddy cop movie.
Oy.
Which, I guess they beat Marvel to the punch doing a buddy cop team up. So just like Ant-Man being on his own, being funny.
So the reports indicate that the movie will feature the Jaime Reyes version of the character.
Oh. Okay, yeah, I see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they can get a little diversity thrown in there?
Yeah. Poor Ted Kord.
So they said they had movie plans for Ted Kord, because that's the reason he wasn't going to be in Arrow, and they had to use the Atom instead. At least that was a rumor. So they originally wanted to use Ted Kord, but he was off limits. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Are we in rapid fire?
Sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to do real quick. Agent Carter's Shield, 50th anniversary number one. Nice little one-off story. It was a little on the odd side. We have a story about Peggy Carter post-World War II, pre or very early days of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there's a guest star who has appeared on the TV show who is a Marvel hero. And, you know, kind of playing a weird role in the book. It's not the story you expect, but it's not a story that, you know, is either essential for the character or essential for any fan of S.H.I.E.L.D., to be perfectly honest. It just sort of was there. All-new Hawkeye number 5 has interesting developments for the character and the storyline. I don't think everyone's going to enjoy how we kind of pivot from one story, how one story sort of ends, and how the next story with these characters and characters that have just been recently introduced, how the next chapter in their story begins. It's kind of an odd pivot. I kind of found myself trying to figure out how to understand this. It might take taking a look at the next issue to understand. Basically, ring the spoiler bell. We have what appears to be Old Man Hawkeye, and you know, I'm trying to figure out how we got to that point. In the story. So you know I did not appreciate the confusion at the end of this, but it does lead to a nice cliffhanger because you want to see how, you know, why things are the way they are at the end of the story. I think that covers it for me.
All right.
Yeah, that covers it for me.
All right, I got a couple things to throw out then. Let me jump down here. If anybody knows me at all, then they know that, of course, I read Voltron from the Ashes, number 1.
Yay!
This is the new Voltron series from Cullen Bunn. And basically what he's done is there was a battle with Voltron that defeated all the Robeasts, defeated Hagar the Witch, defeated the Drool Empire, and Voltron was no longer needed. And Voltron has gone away. And what you see is the story jumps ahead 200 years in the future.
What?
From the original.
Wow.
And there's the remains of Voltron are, like, embedded in the desert, and this facility has been built nearby, and there are tribes of the different colors, the red, the black, the green, the blue, the yellow, and they're training people to be warriors in case Voltron is ever needed again. So it's kind of like monks, you know, living out in the desert, except that these are younger kids, these are teenagers that are, you know, trying to be trained, and some of them take it seriously, some of them don't. But what happens at the very end of the book is that the witch, Hagar, she was in one of those Robeast coffins, and the coffin is recovered in deep space by these space pirates. And so it ends with this feeling that, Voltron is going to be needed again, because she's got some bad ideas up her sleeve. But you know, for a first issue, it does spend a lot of time laying this groundwork of the final battle and jumping ahead 200 years to the future and what the society is like around it. It doesn't really give you anything as far as what's happening, you know, that's going to lead to Voltron being back, other than the fact that you know the evil witch is out there with some space pirates. But it does have that build feel to it. It just really depends on how comfortable you are with the idea of making such a leap. Mm-hmm. You know, jumping 200 years in the future, if that bothers you, because you're not going to have a story with Keith and Pidge and Alora and Hunk and, you know, all of those characters that you're familiar with.
It's going to be...
Sven's dead.
Fine.
But but anyway, it's interesting for what it is, but it's one that's going to have to play out a little bit more before I can really decide if I like it or hate it, you know? The other thing I wanted to talk about was a whole line of comics came out this week from Double Take. And these are all comics that are based in the universe of Night of the Living Dead. Hmm. And they released, 10 books that are all different stories happening around Pittsburgh at roughly the same time that Night of the Living Dead is happening. And they released this box called Genesis. If you buy this box, it's $20 for the 10 issues. So it's $2 an issue. If you buy them regularly, they're $2.50. So you are getting a break if you buy the whole set. Some of them are okay. Some of them are kind of terrible. The biggest problem, though, is that all of these books were previously released online as what you might call an infinite comic.
Right.
Type of deal where you click on the panel and the person will move a little bit, you know. And so they've taken those and they've adapted them to the printed page. And in some books it works a little better than others, especially because that technology of going panel to panel, sometimes it zooms in and sometimes it zooms out. And when you do that printed, it becomes much more obvious because the artwork doesn't match up from panel to panel.
Right.
With the way it has zoomed in and zoomed out, it's like the lines are a lot thicker, and you can see, you know, a little bit of that jagged edge around the artwork as it's, you know, zoomed in on it. Mm-hmm. Some of them have interesting stories. Like this one, for instance, is a bunch of people out at the lake when the zombie attack happens, and so people just start disappearing in the water, almost like a Jaws type situation, which is interesting. Some of these, like Remote, is a person at the radio station on the outskirts of town, and you know, people are disappearing, and you know, she's trying to get the information coming over the emergency lines to tell people what's happening. So some of those are kind of interesting, but some of them, I forget which one it is, but in one of these, there's like a zombie coming at him, and he's hungry, so they offer him food, and the zombie eats the food and leaves them alone.
Really?
Which, like, I don't know if they just missed the whole point of what the zombie attacks are supposed to be, you know? So, like I said, some of these are okay. Some of them are just terrible. If you're a Night of the Living Dead fan, honestly, you can read these online at Double Take's website. So I would suggest just go to their website and go through them and find if there's, you know, one or two that you like and go pick up the paper copy, but I would not buy the pack to get all of them. It was something I was expecting to do that, was to get that pack. You know, whole bunch of zombie books, great. But the quality was just not there for
The
books. Yeah. So they made a big splash, but might not be too many ripples following behind it.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah.
That's...
I think other than that, those were 10 books, by the way, that I read right there. 10 books that I read, so.
Real quick, did anyone read Bizarro?
My kid stole it, and I haven't gotten it back yet to read it.
I was just going to say, real quick, this is a surprise click of the week candidate for me again, because I always have fun reading this Bizarro book, because, you know, this one specifically had a great guest appearance by Zatanna, and if you're familiar with Zatanna and how her ability to wield magic works, they definitely play with that and Bizarro's way of speaking, and you know, hijinks ensue, you know. So it's a lot of fun to read. I was very pleasantly surprised by this. I love the Chupacabra, you know. It's just a cool little, you know, additional visual thing to see on each page. The art in this is just quirky and fun. It says here on the credits page that Darwin Cook of
New Frontier.
Yes, I was about to say I couldn't remember the title. I was going to actually go to the bookshelf and get it, because I do have the trades of DC's New Frontier. Does some guest work, guest artwork in the issue, but the art by Gustavo Duarte is really, really, you know, just. It's so fun, you know. It's so quirky. It's so fun, you know. I can't recommend this book to anyone who's just looking to kind of enjoy a read, as opposed to get into a lengthy story. If you're just looking to enjoy something, this is still part of an arc of stories. This is Bizarro America Part 3, and I don't think this is over yet. I think this is actually. You know what? I think Bizarro America Part 3. I don't know if they're continuing into the next issue. The next issue revolves around some Mulder and Scully type characters who appear at the end of this issue, so we'll see how that goes. Yes. Yeah, but you'll enjoy this dirt because, you know, like I said, I like the little play on Zatanna's use of magic in this and how that plays with Bizarro. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this book, but like I said, my kids grabbed it and ran off, and it's somewhere in our house. Well, we just had it the other day, Dad. It's got to be somewhere right around here. Well, great, go find it. You know,
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. All right. I think that covers it unless somebody read Dr. Fate number 4, Black Canary number 4.
Nope.
Clicks of the Week. I guess we should say we also, of course, read The Paybacks and Dave, too.
Yep.
Not this week. I'll go, if no one else will. Star Wars number 9. I loved it.
Nice! The one Marvel book you read.
Yep.
Don't tell DC.
So on the week that you read a bunch of DC, you picked the Marvel book.
Well, I only read 2 DC.
Oh, you have the others two to read.
The others two read.
I gotcha.
And then of course there is Martian Manhunter and Doom. What else came out that I like from them this week? Those are just two off the top of my head.
I've enjoyed Wonder Woman, the new run. I just haven't read the new issue yet.
I reviewed that volume 2 where the Finches came on. It was all right.
It's okay. It's okay. The art is still the best feature.
I guess to tease another review for next week, I think, well, actually, according to NetGalley, it comes out in a week or two, but apparently, according to Comics List or Comic List, it came out this week, the Flash Season 0.
The trade of that?
Yeah, I have that to review. I thought NetGalley has it coming out later in the month, but
it may be the difference between comic shops and bookstores. So maybe coming to comic shops and then bookstores in a couple weeks.
Okay, because yeah, DCComics.com had it coming out this week, yesterday. I was like, wait, what? So, and then also, I think according to NetGalley, next week Wednesday is Batman Endgame, the trade.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to try to review that.
Well, I'm going to go with the other Star Wars book and say that Lando is my click of the week because, like I said, I've just enjoyed this so much. And this is of all the Star Wars stuff that Marvel has done, and it's all been pretty good. Princess Leia maybe a little below the others, but Lando is by far the one I've enjoyed more than anything else.
Nice. Man, I'm still...
Are you looking forward to Chewie's book?
You know, I'll read it, but, I mean, Chewie's no Lando.
Hmm.
This is true.
Hmm. I am torn. Torn. You know what? I'm going to stick with... I let drop a bunch of candidates for Click of the Week for me. And I think I'm going to narrow it down to those and just pick. Because I didn't have like a single standout issue, although I definitely enjoyed a lot of the things I read this week. All right, I just got to just take a shot and name one. Let's go with, drum roll please, Bizarro number 4, believe it or not.
Wow.
I had a lot of fun reading this. The book is so quirky, and some days or some weeks you just sort of need something like that, and then this is what jumps out at you. So I definitely enjoyed this book. You know, if you're in need of a good, of a smile coming across your face at just that right time, pick this book up, because it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Do we hear anything from Roddy?
He never did.
Check the sheet.
Oh yeah, we do have a sheet that we never look at.
Because we get lazy and we don't type in our list.
I do.
I try.
I do.
And he hasn't.
Roddy, if you can hear us.
So yeah, we'll stall while I start doing the closing remarks. I want to thank our guest tonight, Ryan Ferrier, for joining us. Make sure to check out
Hold on. All right, finish the plug. I'm sorry, I clapped right over it.
I was just saying, Dave 2, number 1, is out in stores.
Yes. It's good stuff, people.
check him out on Twitter at Ryan Ryder. And of course, our guests from last week, Don Cates and Elliot Rahal's, The Payback number 2 is out from Dark Horse. Check that out as well. Agent Simony and myself both have physical copies.
Yep.
I'll be tracking down, I'll either track down a Dave copy. They didn't have one at my shop that I saw. I may just do the Comixology purchase on that. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimTheOGG98 and at CBKron. RoddyCat is at RoddyCat and at NewsNerdsNeed. Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yay!
There you go.
And Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. And we'll be back with a regular episode next week. We've got our having the guest spots out of our system. We'll be back to longer shows where we spend more time on the news and reviews and all that good stuff. If there are any creators you'd like to see on future shows, let us know. Send email to comicbookchronicles@gmail.com or send tweets at myself, TimDOGG98, or at CBKron. We'll try to make that happen for you.
Sure. And next week we're going to be leading is going to be the build-up and the lead-up to New York Comic Con.
I think Baltimore Comic Con is next weekend, too.
Oh, is it? Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Marvel's been sending out like 50 press stuff a day from previews for number ones. So, yeah, so New York Comic Con, there'll be some announcements there. I'll probably do another like live blog on the website, just updating it with the news that I find interesting, like I did for San Diego. Stay tuned for that.
Got it.
We are the comic book... Oh.
What?
RoddyCat did chime in. He said he only read a couple books so far.
No, it's all right, Roddy. For him. We gotcha.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Good evening. Hey!